This pilot's challenges will change the way you think about your own challenges. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. I have a friend named Vance Breese who tells people his sense of humor has been surgically removed. Vance suffered a brain injury serious enough to wind up being declared dead, and in the last 15 years has gone from being unable to stand without help or hold a conversation to a private pilot certificate and 700 hours of PIC in the logbook. Vance may be unable to tell when something's funny, but the part of his brain that comes up with funny things continues unimpaired. As you might imagine, that makes for some interesting conversations, especially in group settings. I hope you find this conversation as interesting as I did. I caught up with Vance a few days ago on the El Mirage dry lakebed in California at a gyroplane meet and got him to tell me about some of the very rich experiences his life has provided up to this point and where he's going from here. If you've ever thought your personal barriers to flight were insurmountable, got discouraged at battling the FAA over a special issuance medical, or even just felt that only lucky people get to fly, there's something for you in this three-part feature. Vance Breese, if you think you've heard that name before, there's a reason.
Well, my father was a contract test pilot, and according to sources that I believe to be reasonable, tested 85% of the planes used by the Allies during World War II. He was the first one to fly the P-51 Mustang. It was the X-63 then. The first one to fly Jack Northrop's little flying wing. He did the advanced flutter testing on the P-38 Lightning. First one to fly the B-25. It's almost like he's Kilroy when you're looking at first flights. And he was the guy that they called usually after they'd killed a couple of test pilots and they wanted somebody who wouldn't destroy the equipment and end up dead. And he charged, interestingly enough, by the foot of wingspan. And he charged way more than anybody else, and he could do it quicker than anybody else.
All right, so coming from a background like that, one would think it would be a natural progression to want to be immersed in aviation from a young age, but that doesn't seem to have happened.
Well, my father and I didn't exactly get along. And plus, who wants to stand in that shadow? You know, people would always say if I was flying, well, he's no Vance Breese. And I don't think that's a very nice thing. So I went off in a different direction. And apparently it came through in my genes that I needed to do something like that. And I became a fairly serious motorcycle road racer. And something that's truly bizarre is you look at articles about him and his flying and the Ford Reliability Tours and that kind of thing, and you look at articles about me and they use the same words to describe us. And I have no idea why that is, because we really didn't communicate.
Well, now, you ended up leaving home at a fairly early age.
13.
How did you get from there to being a fairly serious motorcycle road racer?
Well, that's where we get into the R-rated stuff. At 13, it's really hard to get laid. And I ran away to Eastern Oregon, and it's really hard to get laid in Eastern Oregon anyway, particularly as a 13-year-old. And I had the opportunity to help a fellow move from one location in Medford to another location, which is a college town. And I was fortunate enough to attend a college party and met a woman. And, of course, because it was so difficult and so important to me as a 13-year-old, it was really important for me to get from Richland, Oregon to Medford, Oregon. And the way to do that at the time was as soon as I turned 14, I could get a learner's permit on a motorcycle. And so I bought a Norton Dominator 99 that was set up for road racing, and the nearest paved road was 22 miles away. And so I learned to ride it in kind of an unusual way, and that background allowed me to develop some techniques that later worked very well in road racing. And until I started road racing, there was really nothing I'd ever done well. I hadn't done team sports well. I was terrible in school. I was just basically felt like a loser. And suddenly when you race in a motorcycle race and you win, then you've achieved some kind of recognition. And I found that particularly alluring.
Okay, so place this era for us, too. Tell our listeners the years during which you were getting into motorcycle racing and what was going on in the sport at that time.
Well, in the early 60s, virtually all of the factories were getting involved in it, and you really didn't have to be very good to get some kind of sponsorship. But I also discovered that virtually all of the road racers had spent a lot of time in a lot of pain in a hospital. And so I raced up until, I'm trying to remember now, 1967, 69. And then I quit for several years because I didn't want to do that. And I got back into it in a very low-key way. And it wasn't long before I was back into it on a higher level and raced for the Norton importer and raced for the Moto Guzzi Ducati distributor on the West Coast raced in a very clandestine way for Harley-Davidson and generally had a wonderful time for 23 years.
When you play a high-risk game, there comes a day when you know it's time to quit. More of the Vance Breese story in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Piperjet.
Pipersport.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/piperaircraft.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Vance Breese, the only pilot I know who survived a fatal brain injury. After years as a successful motorcycle road racer, Vance quit the sport and turned his attention to land speed records at Bonneville. Why?
Well, I fell off my sidecar and broke my ankle right through the joint, and I found out for close to a year when I leaned to the left, which was the ankle I broke, that I would think about how much it would hurt if I fell over, and that took some of the joy out of the road racing experience. And I was also conscious that I was too old, and there's a lot of ways to say, well, that really doesn't matter. The problem is, once you're a racer and you've toured around the country, you learn that if someone passes you going into a corner, get on their butt and find out exactly what they're doing. And as you get older, you may find out that they're just simply more serious than you are. They're just simply better than you are. They have a better racing program. It's more important to them. And so old road racers get hurt. And so in 1979... was the first time I raced at Bonneville, and we broke the bike on the rollers, so that wasn't a very successful thing. But I went back in 1980 and set a record, and it's such a historic place that the experience was addicting. And literally what you used to do is qualify for record one day and go out and run both ways the next day. And there were these wonderful puffy clouds that morning, and I could swear that I saw the faces of my Bonneville heroes up in the clouds cheering me on, because the difference in Bonneville is everybody is trying to achieve the same thing, which is set a record, and it's not competitive in the same way that drag racing or road racing is. And I found that to be a wonderful experience.
So you sort of saw a Mount Rushmore made out of water vapor of the guys you were out to beat.
That would be accurate, and they were all cheering us and reminding us that even though we were splashing out through the brine pools and we hadn't had enough sleep and all, and it was the very last day to set a record, they were reminding us that it was something important, and being an impound was important, and the whole thing was important and exciting, and that I essentially was a part of the continuum of the Bonneville experience.
Tell us about a couple of the significant records you were after, because I know you've done a couple of different types of bikes. What were the things that attracted you? What records did you want to take down?
The first one, we just had this motor that worked really well, and I bought a wrecked K-model Harley-Davidson and sawed it up, and went out, and the record belonged to Kawasaki at that time. And in 1980, anybody felt that a record that had fallen to a Kawasaki was gone forever for a Harley-Davidson, and we went out and beat it by a couple of miles an hour. And that's the amazing thing at Bonneville is it's so hard to get those last few miles an hour. And so that was kind of a lark. And then when I broke my ankle, I started building a motorcycle from scratch. I literally borrowed the engine from a guy in a bar, and we built it into a fuel engine, and everybody helped me out because by then I was a cool Bonneville guy because I burned almost 12 inches of my leg on my exhaust pipe because I wouldn't put my leg outside the fairing on the record run. And so that made me a cool Bonneville guy. And so a lot of people helped me. And that bike, the idea was to go over 200 miles an hour, get in the 200 mile an hour club, and get the little red hat that says 200 mile an hour club. And the first year we had an electrical problem, but the second year I went down at 201, came back at 200 point something, but it wasn't in the same mile. And so my record still stands at 199.954, so a half of a tenth of a mile an hour short of getting the red hat. And we tried several times after that, but always hand grenaded the motor. And so that was the end of that. And then I was at an antique bike meet and admiring a particular bike that was something that I would have built if I'd been alive then. And I really liked it, but a lousy one was $50,000 and a really nice one was worth a whole lot more than that. And I, in my typical arrogant way, said, well, why restore history when you can make it? And so we decided to start building a streamliner to go faster than at the time the record was 322 miles an hour, and to go after that record. And so we designed and built, my friends and I, the smallest streamliner that's ever run at Bonneville. It looked like a radio-controlled thing, and nobody could believe this guy with a five-layer fire suit that looked like the Michelin Man could fit in it, and nobody believed that you could possibly balance it. And after 4 years, I managed to prove them right by crashing at 265 miles an hour and having the parachute not work. But the year before, I crashed at 340 miles an hour, but that doesn't count for a record because I couldn't go both ways. And the parachutes worked properly then, and I actually taught a class the next day. So, and we fixed everything, but we had a little problem with the racetrack, and we believe that's what caused me to tip over. And we have no idea. The parachute came out, but it didn't open. And then you begin to roll like if you tried to bowl a football. And, of course, at some point it starts getting up on the edges, and my friends counted off 500 feet between touchdowns, and the lowest estimates were 20 feet above the ground, and the highest estimates were 35 feet above the ground, and it took a mile and a half to get it stopped. So it was kind of ugly. Once it goes sideways, it rolls up the cord for the parachute, and of course then the parachute won't open, and you're just along for the ride.
Tomorrow, imagine how your life might change if you regained consciousness on a cadaver table. More of the Vance Brees story in tomorrow's second of three installments. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.